The on-ramp today felt steep, Chris, but we made it to the top.
Cathartic. That was it, the cathartic on-ramp.
How was your first week back at school?
Okay, so one, I don't know if this came out in our last podcast. I think it came out in some conversation. Maybe it was our conversations have become just too fluid, where you were. I don't know if I was flippant, and I apologize if I was. The time that you spent, or someone like you spent, setting up your classroom, and me saying, yeah, I'm not the guy that's going to store all that kind of stuff. I'm in a space where it is likely I'm going to have just as much stuff. I'm still going to try to not bring it home. I am not going to put it in my basement. Mark my word. Wait till we get to the end of this season and see if I'm apologizing again to you for being so cavalier. But I have to build, buy, or borrow. There's the three B's, eh, for being a new teacher. Build, buy, or borrow a ton of stuff for my classroom. It's like looking in the fridge. You know what it is? Here's the thing. This is what my week was like. So in my family, I'm the one that does a lot of the cooking. My spouse will look in the fridge and say, there's nothing for dinner. We're like, there's nothing to eat in here. I'll sort of look in the fridge and I'll throw together a banquet. Now that's entirely based on my previous life of, being in hospitality, some of the skill set, a little bit of my creativity is, and I can put those things together to be able to deliver a meal that will be adequate for my family, nourishing for my family, enjoyable for my family. It's not to say that the resources aren't scarce. It's just that I'm able to see what I can do with minimal resources. That's my classroom right now. And I'm looking at it, just trying to do the best little banquet that I can with the meager resources that I have that are borrowed. Some are built, and I haven't bought much. I'm a little more resistant to the buying part, but that's what next week is going to be like, is sort of bringing in the actual resources that I can honestly say are more appropriate for my programming with the students that I'm working with. So that's what this, that's been a big part of the getting to know the school, getting to know the kids, and getting to know myself this week. And I just kept on cycling through it. I just kept on cycling through it. Definitely fatiguing to spend that much time. Even like, I've been fortunate that it's made it up to sleep time. It hasn't quite made it in, it hasn't made it into dream time. Which means that, at least I can put that bag of work down. See, now we're even like, we should start trademarking this because we're starting to use it over and over again. The bag of work, I've done a great job of just putting it down before sleep. So I am getting sleep. But this week has very much felt, I felt like I've spent a lot of time in my own head and still functioning in the classroom with others. It's like, it's a very strange feeling. You ever, like, almost like having your hearing turned off slightly or turned down. Like you feel like I'm aware of my surroundings. I'm aware of everybody else kind of doing their thing, but I'm so up in my headspace this past week. I wonder if people are kind of saying things like, wow, that guy's like kind of cold. Like he's just like, what's up with him? He's so, but I almost feel a little numb just because I'm doing so much. Not too much thinking. It's not overwhelming, but I'm doing a ton of thinking. Still good, still valuable, still happy I made the change. I think this is the uncomfortable, itchy sweater result of taking a chance on change. So this is when you got it. This is when I have to deal. And it doesn't dissuade me or push me away from the fact that I switched schools, switched programming, and we have a lot of change going on at home as well. It's just that it's the reminder that this is when I think I wrote a piece one time somewhere. I put some nice words together about talking about growth mindset. And there aren't a lot of conversations when I growth mindset, I get it. This isn't a, I'm not debating what growth mindset is. Carol Dweck, thank you. Everybody else that sort of does writing on that. But the counter or parallel conversation about how growth mindset can cause anxiety heart palpitations, loss of sleep, loss of appetite. There's a physiological response to being open to change. And I like having those conversations, especially where it's a conversation where it's not, I'm not going to pull back and stop, but this is what I'm going through right now. I just kind of need to say the words out loud. And I think in some ways that was also our on-ramp, connecting with other people's experiences that in some way could be perceived as negative, but it's real. This is a real experience that adults go through with their work, that I'll say definitely teachers go through when they're experiencing change. So that's the bigger, broader theme of this first week, is like dealing the hand that I dealt myself. So how's about you?
I like the way you summed it up. Number one, dude, I don't bring all that stuff home at the end of the year. It stays at school. So don't think that like when the end of June rolls around, all that stuff comes back to my home. It does not. The reason why it was at home was just because I was moving schools and I couldn't get it out. Mm. Like I couldn't get it from one school to the other. It wasn't going to happen. So please, please, please don't do that. Don't bring your stuff home and say to your wife, yeah, Roland does this every June. Don't do that.
I probably reframed that wrong. What I think it was the conversation about having so much of your own stuff. And I pause. And one of the things for us, I don't know if this is for you at secondary, pretty much, I would say, I won't say a percentage, but a large percentage of classrooms, like you're kind of stripping it at the end of the school year. There's few classrooms that even when I was doing the alt ed, there was always the chance that they were going to say, okay, you're going to have to move classrooms next year. We need to move stuff around and you're going to be on a different floor. In observing my kids' school who are at elementary, I've seen now teachers remaining in the same classroom kind of year after year after year. And then I'm imagining there's something strategic about that. There's something, you know, that helps the kids kind of organize their spaces, build rapport, get familiarity. I don't know if there's this. Have you, like, in the schools you've been, your school life so far, typically do teachers more times than not get to keep their classroom for their sort of lifetime at a school?
More times than not for the lifetime, but for like a couple of years.
Yeah. So me calling you out, blasting you like that, I think it was just, I'm at the heart of it is that I'm recognizing I am going to have now a small truckload of things that I've developed that it's likely I'm going to feel an affinity towards. Like that's kind of that's the stuff that I've developed for my program. And it's not likely I'm going to be moving away from the classroom that I'm working out of, because I'm connected with another teacher and another teacher. Like we're kind of in a hub of the school where we're located, but at some point I'm going to have stuff. And that's a new space for me, because I've always been sort of leave it behind. No problem. I've never actually felt like I've put my paw print on that thing and saying, I want to keep developing that thing. So it's got to move with me. But I may even, I'm admitting, probably be bringing some stuff home for the summer. So.
Oh, what? I'm not touching that with a 10-foot pole. Okay. Yeah. So I just wanted to address that. I knew that you didn't mean it the way you said it, but I was like, no way he dropped it. So I'm going to step on it. I kind of feel like, well, the first week was a success in terms of I survived. My kids survived. I do feel a little bit like, I do feel like maybe people are looking at me like you're not very social because I'm sticking to my room. In the free time, and I use that word loosely because I don't really have free time, but like at recess or my preparation time before school and after school, I feel like there's so much to do in terms of paperwork, in terms of like the startup, that I've not gone in the staff room once this week to eat. I go in there to fill up my water and get back to work. And I'm in a space where there are constantly people walking past my room because my room is right beside the staff room. And a lot of people do go to the staff room. So, and I'm across from, this is really cool about this school. I'm across the room from special education. But they don't call it special education at my school. They call it student success, which is a which has been a high school thing and intermediate senior thing in my system. We have student success consultants who help students that are that require it at a deeper level than what the classroom teacher does. And so at my school, it's called the student success room, which is cool because it's never been dropped down to the primary level as far as I know in my work in this system. And so that's, I really like it. It's fresh and I like it. So because that room is across the hall from me and people are constantly visiting that room and students are constantly visiting that room and teachers are constantly visiting the staff room, I feel like there's always chatter outside my door before and after school. And I've not jumped into that. Like I've not stepped into the hall and say, hey, what's going on? I'm just in my room doing my thing. Something cool I noticed is that my desk, so when you walk into my room, the first thing you see is like my teacher desk, but I'm never there. I'm always in the far right-hand corner. So when you walk in, you have to literally turn your body 90 degrees to see me. I'm always behind the computer. So I'll see people poke their heads in and they look at my desk and I think they automatically think Roland's not here. And I'm like, hello. Then they turn like, oh, you're in here.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, right? So people are going to learn quickly. You're not going to find me sitting at my teacher desk. You're going to find me at the computer because that's kind of my workspace when I'm with the kids. And we try to use digital as much as we can. We try to leverage digital in a lot of different things. So I need to be close to that station. So yeah, I've noticed like I've not been partaking in any kind of social stuff. And I wonder if people think, is this guy okay? I wonder. It's not affecting me to the point where I need to change my behavior. I know what I need to do and I'm doing it. And hopefully people will build rapport with me and I will build with them as time goes on. And something you and I talked about in the on-ramp that really hit me that I've kind of dealt with and put aside is going into other teachers' rooms and then seeing what they're doing right now in the first week and then feeling like I'm not doing enough. So that's like an instant, somebody throws water in your face and you've got that initial shock. But then after you dry off and you think about it, you're able to break it down and then you're able to gain some perspective. And so my perspective has been that it's okay. I just got here. I need some things that maybe they don't need, right? Like their needs are different from my needs right now. And I need to do what I need to do to make sure that I can function with my students and to make sure that I learn who my kids are so that I can give them what they need. So if that teacher's doing a particular thing in that room at that time, they've deemed that necessary. And I'm doing what I deem to be necessary. But that's always like taking a step back and reflecting, right? It doesn't happen in the moment. And then the other thing I wanted to just throw in is motivation. I'm motivated, but sometimes I need reminders. I need to hear stories that really get me at the heart and have me thinking about and appreciating what I have instead of focusing on what I don't have. I know that's really general. I don't know if I have the time to really break that down for you, but the short of it is that being in a new place, doing a grade that I didn't do last year with a whole set of new people, new norms that I have to become part of, you start to second guess yourself about things. I do not second guess myself leaving my last school. That had to happen. Now that I've started this school year, like it's sunk in a lot more that I had to leave because what was happening at my last school wasn't good for me. Whereas where I am now, I feel good about what I'm doing, but there's like 100 things in front of that are getting in the way of me enjoying and being grateful for what I'm doing because there's so many other things that are in front of that. You get what I'm saying? So like, yep. I really have to be aware to grab that thing at the back and push it right to the front so I can feel motivated and good, and then continue on with my way. And I've been doing that a lot at work, actually. I've been doing a lot of what I call resetting. So I'll catch myself in a moment of self-doubt or low, like just feeling low. And then I'll be like, no. That's all the periphery. Switch, get back to center. And then, so what's happening is I find myself on the periphery with that thinking. I switch on and off. I come right back to center. And then throughout the day, I slowly move back out to the periphery. And then I re-switch again and I come back. So I've been doing a lot of that, which is good because that tells me that along the way, I've picked up a lot of the tips and techniques that experts who are on YouTube and stuff have been providing the world with. And I've been really taking those things to heart. You and I have talked a lot about these people on the podcast, these influencers and stuff who have their little piece of the world and their expertise. And I've been taking that and really dragging it into my world and using it to benefit me and therefore benefiting my students and the people that work with me in my room.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a good week. I'm looking forward to next week. I'm looking forward to getting into a groove and continuing to get to know my kids.
I love the sort of looking at other people's spaces and just observing my own thinking, where you observe the external and all of a sudden it becomes about you. And catching myself when I'm looking at other people's classrooms and other people's resources and even other people's experiences, and thinking to myself, it must be so much easier for them. And as soon as I go there, I realize I'm not in the space where I should be, which is paying attention to what I'm developing in the small space with the students that I have. Yesterday, so I have the two sections, so two periods where I'm working in the ASD program. And then I end the day working with grade 12 students doing a grade 12 learning strategies course. And we had a great conversation a couple of days ago about how they would like to hack learning strategies. So by the time a student has hit grade 12 with learning strategies, their needs are very different. They're different, but based off of the building blocks of grade 9, 10, and 11. But the transition goals for a student that's in grade 12 are looking towards pathways beyond secondary, whatever they might be, wherever they think their next step is going to be. And also within that, taking into account the when they're transitioning out of high school, it's also that's a really kind of critical turning point of transitioning out of public education. So you're moving out of a system where, whether you see it or not, the resources are all there for you. So we had a great conversation about how do we generalize or make portable the things that are right now, like you have a guidance counselor that you can go down and you can talk to. You have a co-op department that can get you job experience. You have a leadership team that can have sit downs and give you some mentorship. You have multiple teachers, like you have all these resources that when you move into the paid model beyond grade 12, they're not all co-located in the same spot. So we had a time a couple times this week where we were talking about, well, what are the things that we want to hack the grade 12 course? And we still have, we have units and we have things we have to get to, but I want to make it clear that this has to be like the penultimate kind of moment for someone, for you, so that you're actually stealing from the course things that you think you could take with you next. And so one of the themes or categories that popped up was developing mental wellness skills, like not just an activity, but pushing hard at kind of developing that muscle. So I said, well, here's what we're going to try. So we did some progressive muscle relaxation yesterday, and I did a little bit of on-ramp to it for the kids. But I took it entirely from their survey and I just presented it to them, like taking that chance, we're going to do it. It's a 10-minute exercise. It's it's so actualized that you can speak to it as meditative, or you can talk about its physical activity, like that sort of, you know, the work in the muscles and the releasing the muscles. Like there's a concrete basis to it that often in the past, some students have said, well, I don't want to do meditation. I can't do that thing. I don't get it. And it's too esoteric for some students. Like they don't, why are we doing this, sir? Where's the mark? But there's something really concrete about even saying, clench your fist, release your fist. Can you feel the difference? Let's work on paying attention to that. So that conversation, working with the grade 12 students, made me sort of realize all the new spaces that I'm kind of diving into with the new students. And also going full on, trusting my instinct first, not what I see, not what I'm taking in from the out, like somebody else's stuff, but trusting my instinct based on my life lived so far in learning strategies, my life lived so far in secondary. And just, I'm not going to say insulating, but reaffirming my operating system that I've actually developed a craft that I can build things according to the context that I'm being presented. So that's the lead to the second part, is going into the new school and building new relationships. I am so hyper aware of the social circles that I observe. So I'm stepping away from students now a little bit. Obviously, I mean, you get a new class of 30 kids, you're observing new social circles. You see how different kids connect and, you know, their friends in another class, all that kind of stuff. But it is fascinating to have, I have people at this new school that I've known for a long time. They were actually expats from a former school. When this school opened up, it's in its fifth year. There were quite a few teachers that left the high school I was at to go to this new high school. So I arrived there and I did know people. And it's always interesting to see the other, as in I have a relationship with these people, some of them tight, some of them not so tight, some of them we've had family events together. But I get to see their interaction away from me. The nearest comparison I can make to this, and maybe this has happened to you, when you go to an event with your spouse and there's people, you get to see, how do I do this? You get to see the relationships that your spouse has, but you get to observe them in real time. And you have this sort of space of not knowing. It's like, wow, I always thought of that person with a singular relationship to me, but they have a whole other circle of connections that I've never observed before. So not only am I looking at the like all the different groups that are at this new high school, but I'm also seeing how individuals that I know interact with people that I've never met. And it makes me think about the growth I have to do to build these kind of relationships. And last night was the staff social that I couldn't attend for logistical reasons. The way that it played out is that I was on, because my spouse had an event that night as well, between the two of us, we had to sort of decide whose event was more important. And this is going to happen a lot, both of us in education. So her event, it was critical that she attended it. So ultimately I'm on parent duty, so I had to pick up the kids. But I had that same thing. Like I get it. It's, you're torn. I should have attended. I actually do believe I should have, but the reality was is that just wasn't going to happen. I've sometimes had students, I've talked to students about what would you do if you could kind of have a do-over in how people know you and how people connect with you. And I think I might have over idealized it a little bit, because I'm now really seeing the challenges, because that's kind of the opportunity that I have with this school. Like I could be a different person. I could sort of change. I could change how I do. It's actually quite incredibly difficult. Because, you know, one of the first things that I think happens when you experience this kind of change is that you fall to a default position of using the tools that you have. And with those tools come behaviors and beliefs and all that kind of stuff. And that whole growth mindset of being open to change, that's the external experience coming in. The growth mindset, I'm guessing now, because I'm feeling a little stretched on this, is looking at the toolkit that I have to deal with that change in a positive way, and using the best of my tools, but not chucking them out, because I may need one of those tools next time. It's real. Like, my mind is, I think I was holding off doing any deep thinking until I actually sat down with you, because I needed a little bit of the mirror, but a little bit of the sounding board too, to kind of push it out. So it was a crazy week of, I was really observing, so much observation that I think I lost track of some of the things that I was seeing.
I hear you. It's kind of neat that we're both going through this newness. I think I think it's cool that we both can reflect on these things and we can capture them on the podcast and be able to talk about them and journey through it. Like, I think it's really cool that last year at this time, we were both in the work that we had been doing for years, mm-hmm. and we started this experience, right? Let's do this podcast about our work as teachers, our work as fathers. Let's just do it. Let's see what happens. And now we're starting our new school year. This is awesome. This is routine to us every Saturday or Friday or whatever. We get together, we do this, we talk, but now we're talking and we're both in different places. So we find ourselves in that newness and it's fresh again, just like it was fresh last year when we started. I feel rejuvenated and it's kind of cool. And I wonder if this continued on to next year, where we would find the rejuvenation, or I shouldn't say we, where I would find that rejuvenation for this talk every week. And I'm grateful for this podcast, because if I was able to reflect weekly using this medium with you about my work, and if I was able to do that and I was able to get all the benefits from it, I feel like already with my new work, like, I knew at the end of this week we were going to chat and I feel support from the work that we do. I feel supported. And that's not to say that I don't feel supported at work, but like, you know, I'm new there. I'm new to everything there. So if I need support, I need to go out and get it. It's not just there. But with this, it's just here. And so I'm grateful for this opportunity. And my students and I, we talked about what we're grateful for this week, because I purposely made that part of our classroom meetings. I purposely threw it in there for the kids that were staring at me like they had no idea what was going on. And I could connect with them. And again, on the on-ramp, I was talking to you about, you and I have talked about my experience and my racial identity connected to one particular student that I met 2 years ago in my class. And something happened when I met that student. There was kind of like an awakening inside of me to discover more of who I am and to honor who I am that I've never really honored before for a number of reasons. The school I'm in now, the classroom I have now, I've never had before. There are more visible minorities in my classroom this year than I can ever remember. And they are the majority in my classroom. They appear to be the majority in my school. And so even though it's only been a week, I see myself every day at school in more than one child, which to me is mind-boggling, because I've never had that experience and I'm a grown man. And so several times this week, I've looked at particular students of mine right in the eyes and I've seen myself. The look on their face, the shock or the nervousness or the fear or anxiety, I've seen that in me before as a student. And so it's kind of reached me at a whole new level that I don't think I've ever really tapped into as a teacher before. It's the first time. And so yesterday when we talked about the United Nations Global Goals, I introduced it to my students and I told them that we were going to be doing some work around this year. That just because you're in grade 2 and 3 doesn't mean that you have nothing to offer with these amazing goals that globally we're trying to achieve by 2030. So we talked about them a little bit, and the majority of us decided, let's talk about ending hunger. That's what really got them going, which was interesting to me because they chose that, which makes me think, oh my God, how many of my students have experienced hunger? Because why would that resonate with them so strongly? I'm not there yet, but it's just I'm making assumptions and they may be wrong. But it was interesting that they went right to that one. It gives me a flavor, perhaps, for maybe where they come from or what they've experienced. And so we talked about it. And the best part of our talk was that I had some of the students all week who have not said one word, Chris, I'm being 100% serious. There are 4 or 5 students in my class that have not said one word this week. Like when I say good morning, they raise their hand, and they smile. They don't even mimic my good morning. They're just like, I'm not talking. And I'm all, that's fine. Even when I'm conference with them, they don't talk to me. They just nod or they smile or I'm teaching them, give me the thumbs up so I know what's going on. Give me one of these if like you can't figure it out. But they're not verbally speaking. And so a couple of them spoke and offered their 2 cents about what we can do, like what we could do right now as me and grade 2s and 3s to help end world hunger. And that one lesson, that one activity blew me away. And so, but it gave me, I want to use the word hope, but I don't mean it like there's no hope. It gave me like maybe a view or a vision into the future that these kids are really hooked by these types of topics. And we can actually talk about these things and experience them and do what we can as a class of 20 primary students to help meet that goal in our neighborhood, in our way. So when I talk about that stuff, I feel the energy, right? Like it's racing through me as I talk about it. It was racing through me when I was sitting with my kids and having them not talk to me and seeing that fear in their eyes look different and felt different in my new school than it ever has before in any other school I've worked at. So it's the balancing act, right? Like the professional side of me is kind of on my own, but the personal side of me is feeling right at home. And so when I bring those two together and mix them together, it feels fine. It feels fine. If I could just go for a second to the professional side, then I see you. I know you want to say something, so just hold it because I want to share there are 3 grade 3 teachers, and I'm the grade 2-3 teacher. 2 of the grade 3 teachers are right by each other, and they've been working together for years, and they're like, it's harmonious. And it's fun to see. The other grade 3 teacher's on the other end of the hall. I'm in the middle. She's on the other end. She came to me the other day, and she asked me about math. And I think at one point this week, we agreed that we were going to start with number, sense, and numeration. But something happened to me over the last couple of days, and I'm like, that's not what I'm doing. I'm not getting the vibe that that's where I need to start with my kids. So I'm starting with patterning. So this grade 3 teacher walked in and she said, okay, so how are you starting? I said, I'm not starting with what you guys are doing. And she looked at me and I'm like, I put my hands up and I'm like, I'm not being difficult. I'm just, I think that this is what I need to do with my kids. And to be honest, I feel like a third wheel. I feel like a fourth wheel. I have a grade 2-3 class. I need to focus on my 2s and my 3s. I don't have the luxury of just focusing on one curriculum. I have to focus on 2, and I have to find a way to harmonize it as much as I can so that I don't lose my mind. That's my reality. And then she said to me, no, I feel like the third wheel. And so we were kind of, it was a funny moment because we were both kind of battling, like those two are over there and they're harmonious. And then there's the 2 of us who are like the outsiders. And I'm like, I feel like I'm more on the outside than you, but it's all good. I'll listen to you and I'll offer you whatever support you need. I'm done. I need you to speak because I saw you shaking and moving around with high energy, and I feel like you've got something awesome to say.
No, it just, you connected with me, the developing, it's getting to a space where you're several years into your teaching career, the assumption that you have everything that you need to move forward with what's still to come, I think is a common trap. I'll push. I think it's a common trap, and it's not to say that just by connecting and collaborating that it makes necessarily. I think the difficulty of the work never ever changes, but I think the immediate emotional kind of challenge or the sting of having to do the work definitely changes based on how well you've networked. And I think in observing some of the relationships at the school, I realized very quickly that I have to spend more time pushing out to those spaces and being in places where it's not as simple as saying just taking in new information, because that's still it's missing a little bit of the how do I say it? I remember way back in the day when I was still doing hospitality. So this is when I was doing my apprenticeship. And the person, Maria, who was my mentor when I was doing my apprenticeship, she spoke of a breakaway part of the family that had opened up their own restaurant. And she had called them chicken robbers. And I'm probably completely mashing up the language, but la roba gallina. And the idea of being a chicken robber was that you're kind of sneaking in the middle of the night and taking something. People are entirely aware that you're kind of doing it, but they can't really stop you, and you're taking chickens. So you're like taking resources. And she was calling it out because this family were using the recipes from the restaurant I was working at. And in this case, there was a lot of offense because it was family and was familiar. And I'm starting to realize I'm not calling myself out as a chicken robber necessarily, but I think that arriving in this new school, it's been relationships have been made available to me. And I think in the past I would have not avoided, but not as openly developed those relationships quickly, because the trade-off would be somehow that I was kind of stealing from people, and I should develop this stuff myself. Like, you have to push so hard that way. And I realized that that could be a mental trap for new teachers, thinking that they have to do it all on their own. Like, you have to come up with all your own stuff. I think that probably seasoned teachers, and there's a whole spectrum in between, seasoned teachers might be where you and I are, looking at other people's stuff and not measuring it well, like somehow saying that distance to connect to somebody else's classroom might be too far. I would be better off spending time going back to my resource room and kind of suffering and developing it. Now, I'm not trying to impose that. That might not be your mindset right now, but I think there is a trap there that I've seen a few times, because I've noticed my bag of work and other people's bag of work. And I think to myself, what percentage of that bag of work is stuff that you're developing all by yourself because you feel compelled to, because not because of creative reasons, which is a great reason to develop new resources and stuff for your classroom, but because you feel like you have no other option. You have to carry it yourself. So I've been really overwhelmed by observing that and realizing the true value of it and thinking about how I'm going to interact with those things. Like, how am I going to get to the space where I feel comfortable to not only, let's say, reveal my hand and speak to a beginner's reality from a 15-year-old veteran of teaching, right? There's a whole bunch of the, you know, the ego check, the culture check, the... And the thing that's feeding some of this, which is kind of fascinating, is the school that I'm at. Like, I'm one of the old teachers. No joke, man. You kind of left, but I'm one of the old teachers. There's individuals, I think I told you, like my colleague who's been an amazing mentor, I taught 10 years ago. She was a student in my hospitality class. And she went off and she did her thing and graduated and went to university and has lived her life and has done all these things. And now she's my go-to person and has been doing the program that I'm stepping into. Like, I was already a few years into teaching when I started teaching her. So you get this really, I mentioned before about the growth mindset. Growth mindset can be a trap if you think that you're going to grow in the dark. Because as soon as you start to press out and try to sort of grow in open spaces, there's a whole lot of anxiety, a whole lot of imposter syndrome. There's a whole lot of like I should be, like there's somehow an expectation that just because I've worked for 15 years in education, that there's something that I should be repping as a 15-year veteran. And I'm not sure, like I'm very quickly removing that kind of stigma for myself, because I don't know if I can't carry that after this week observing my process. I can't carry that. I just can't. So
it's good that you can recognize that, right? Like some people are going full tilt, eh? Like I see some of the new teachers in the building and I wonder what they're thinking. I wonder how fast they're going. Like, and it's nice that I've been appreciative of the couple of newer teachers that have just talked to me in the hall kind of thing. And they've been open about like, holy cow, like I'm every night I'm doing blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, don't worry, it'll settle down. Like, unless you're the 4%. If you're not part of the 96% of us, if you're the 4%, then you're going to be up every night for the whole school year doing stuff, and in the summer too. But if you're part of the majority, you're just, this is the time. This is what's happening right now with everybody or a lot of people. And don't worry, you'll get into a groove and like you'll know your kids and you'll know how they operate. And then it just becomes normal for you. It becomes normal for you to operate in a particular way that's going to end up meeting their needs, and you're going to end up teaching great stuff, and kids are really going to get engaged and they're going to grow. I said that too. Like, don't forget, like, we're just at the beginning. You know, by December, we're rolling. Like, kids are learning. Kids are building capacity. That's why I hate the beginning, because at the beginning, it's so raw. Everybody's fresh, and fresh is good in a way. It's also bad in a way, because you got to reestablish all these routines and norms. But that's the thing, right? Like, once you get into it, the kids get where you're coming from, you get where they're coming from, then you harmonize and it moves forward. And it was funny because the look on this one teacher's face was like, holy cow, that makes sense. And I'm like, yeah, the only reason I can say that is because I'm holding on to that, because I really don't like this time of the school year. I just don't. For me, the positive parts of the school year are not enough at the beginning to sustain me. So I need to hold on to the middle part. I can give you a great example. This week, during like transition times, I would call students over to me and I had a couple of Chromebooks and I'm like, do you remember how to log on to a Chromebook? Do you remember your login and your password? The ones who have been craving to touch a piece of technology all week, they were like, yeah, 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 can I get in? I'm like, yeah, go nuts, get in, show me. And literally like 10 seconds later, they're logged on. They're like, what do you want me to do now? And I'm like, I want you to sign off and I want you to go back and keep eating your snack. And they're like, no. And then other kids would come up to me and look at me like, I'd have no idea what you want. And then I'm like, okay. And so I take them through it and I show them their login. And it's funny because I have some students that that from what I can tell so far are not completely familiar with the alphabet, our alphabet, and our numbers, because you need to know numbers and letters to log into your password and do all that stuff, right? But trust me, they picked up quick where their letters were and where their numbers were so they could log onto this computer, because even they were showing me that they were eager to use this technology for their learning. We all were able to log in, and I made them little cheat sheets for them to refer to for the first few weeks as they do this. But it wasn't as painful as it's been in the past, because I believe most of these kids have experience from last year and the year before. But that was a good example of, I told the kids, I said, this is just the beginning. Signing on and signing off effectively, I know you want more, but for me, this is huge. Because for me, it's the gateway to more exciting adventures. But it has to start somewhere. So even I was preaching to them that it starts with this. We start small, it starts boring, but don't worry. Once this stuff is automatic, then I can hit you over the head with the pedagogy and the challenges and the stuff that's really going to push you to grow and is really going to frustrate you and get you then thinking about the learning pit, you know, about starting off up here, getting down deep into the learning where you feel some frustration, lack of self-confidence. But as you grow, then you come right back up out of that pit. You're feeling good again. You're ready for the next challenge. And so you could see, like, it's really cool because I love technology, as most people know. And so when I started to connect the technology to the way I operate, I could see them. I could see the lights come on above their heads. They're like, okay, we like that stuff too. And so I see that I'm going to be able to use that as an entryway to get to places where they probably don't want to go. Because I'm hoping that those looks, the looks that they're giving me that remind me of me when I was them, I hope those looks start to extinguish, because I want to see who they are past that fear and past that anxiety. And we did a little bit of that. I read a book called My Teacher is a Monster. And it was awesome because at the end of it, you know, I was like, well, here I am. I'm your monster. I may look ferocious right now, but let me give you some more information about me as time goes on, and you'll see that I'm not a monster. But it was fun. It was great because it was a funny book, so the kids were enjoying it, and they were enjoying comparing me to what I was reading about in the book because they've never met me before, right? And I do look a little bit, you know, I've got the beard. I've got a big voice. And so it is a little, it can be a little unnerving, but we broke the ice and it was good.
It's, did you this past week fall prey to any assumptions?
And kind yes, of, yes kind and of, no.
Yeah, I found it was funny, and I'm trying to measure why I kind of went there. You know, why was it that I sort of leaned on some assumptions? Because I surprised myself with some of my assumptions. And I started to realize that my assumptions that I fell on, and it was when working with the students, I realized it's because I think I was using somebody else's playbook. I think that's what it is. I think I was using somebody else's playbook. And I just realized kind of in the moment where I was working one-to-one with a student that when I wasn't kind of checking, when I wasn't really in the moment, when I wasn't really paying attention, in particular, one student I was working with a resource, and the kid was just flying through it in one-to-one time, flying through it. And it took a second. I was like, why is this, like, what's going on here? Why is this? I feel like there's a problem here, yet the kid is being successful. And it was a mindful moment where I realized that I need a broader differentiation, like, of tools to be able to maximize this kid's experience. Because my assumption was that this one resource would be sort of good enough. Like it's good enough for the lesson. Now, differentiation at the best of times is, you know, I think that's sort of like a long game thing, because you can have 1,000 different resources and still not have the one that will really key into that moment. You sort of feel like you're chasing that moment after the fact. But I had a few times this week where I realized that my assumptions were lying to me. They were kind of lying to me. It happened in working with developing, the grade 12 course that I'm working on. The me being inside my silo, developing the grade 12 stuff. There's another teacher doing it. I got to have a meeting this week with her. And it was awesome. Like it was sort of, I fall into that I was in a mind trap where I thought that because I'm teaching it and well, play this out how this kind of, so the way that this course kind of played out is that originally I was sort of the new teacher to it. And there was going to be a teacher that had already taught it. Now that teacher, the other teacher shared resources with me, which was fantastic. Then that teacher's schedule changed. So I stayed with the course and then a new teacher jumped in that has never taught the strats either. So within a very quick amount of time, I became sort of like the senior lead on it just because like that other person, the teacher that shared the resources with me is still in the school and doing some other stuff. But because that person has shifted out, I'm the one now that's sort of, I felt, here's the assumption, that I was the one that had to sort of take the lead on that. And I realized, no, like it was this week and having conversations with the new teacher, us each having a section this semester, that I had to recalibrate because what I had just done was drop myself into a silo. And I was dying. I was dying because I'm also working on stuff for the other program, the ASD program that I'm a part of. And it was amazing how firm I was in my thinking that I had to sort of work that way. And then I had a quick sit down. And even as, you know, before we started the podcast, I was realizing now I really do crave that connection to sort of go back to the table with my new teaching partner ostensibly and develop more stuff and kind of stay on point with them. Like I felt I had a hard time accepting the strength of that collaboration. And it's funny because we met Thursday after school. And it wasn't until just this morning when I started to think about what I would like to do with the course next that I realized, oh, I wish I could talk to her again. Like I want to talk to her about this and kind of bounce the ideas. Cause it was like this, she was throwing something down. I was throwing something down. And it was just all of a sudden we had a thing. There it was. So we had this idea for an assignment, but the assignment frames are kind of laid out, but we got to tweak them and we got to sort of like bend them a little bit better to the experience of learning strategies right now for these 12s. And I realized this morning, I was like, I wish I could get back to that table. I wish I could get back to the table. What I'll probably do is I may ask her if she wants to do this. Do a sit down. And it's interesting because that's another silo that if you're willing, your creative development, your planning can happen like this. And it's funny, I don't often do that. I don't often say, okay, let's do a live hangout. We can just keep it private. We don't have to sort of publish it at all, but it's a really great opportunity for us to also keep. I mean, I know you can turn it on and not hit record, but that was one thing that I was wondering this year is if she'd be willing to sort of do something like this so we could also keep the footage, you know, we can share the talking part. But I really have to work hard at pushing outside of that because I really didn't feel it. I think it's the first time that I've really, really felt the power of that. I've been in a lot of small spaces where it's just been small team or just me team. And I think I'm having a realization that the next steps in my career, I gotta open up those gates a little bit. It's a really bizarre realization to have. Because I also go retroactive on that and say, what sort of opportunities have I not been able to capitalize because I felt like I have to do it all myself? It's messed up. Because I would measure in some ways I've had a little bit. See, this is the psychotherapy of Decoded, eh? I will say the fatherhood, we haven't touched much on family in this episode, but I'll say this is also something that, I've spent some time really thinking about very similar things in the way that I relate with my own children and my spouse. Like, is there something that have I sort of remained in that closed space and have I missed out on opportunities for growth? And, you know, there could be some spots there of regret, but I think for me, again, just for me, that regret is a springboard towards a different next step. It's not an anchor for me. I can't do that. I feel like the energy to sort of hang on to whatever negativity could be that I didn't do something in the past. I was like, I can only make change moving forward. That stuff's done. But I'm feeling this kind of overwhelming need to boost my openness. And I'm finding a weird connection between taking that risk at work is somehow helping me at home too. I'm not quite sure which is the space that's like really kind of inflating that possibility. But it's, yeah. Yeah. Saturday morning.
I like that idea. I like that idea that the positive, the openness at school is helping at home.
Do you ever have a sense of that? I can remember, do you know Jill Stambolich? You said the connect. Great thinker. What a phenomenal thinker. Like she's all, you know, part of her thing is the integrative thinking, which I've only dipped my toe into. But I got a chance a couple years back to go and speak to her AQ class. She does a music AQ. And that was one of the coolest discussions we had was about what does that partition look like between you at home and you at school, and some people not being comfortable at all with blending that. And I said, because I'm a storytelling teacher, I will draw the story from wherever in order to sort of maximize the experience. But that's like being a chicken robber, because if I only steal it from myself and not spend time investigating the why of the story, the how of the story, what's my lesson learned from the story, and does the story actually make a bigger picture thing better, then, you know, I can't be the person that when I walk in the school that I'm no longer Chris. And when I go home, I can't no longer be teacher. So then my question to this class, these adult classes, like tell me these moments, let's share some moments where you were able to bring the best of you from home to school and the best of school to home. And somehow in that, I didn't get to the next question is, how do you actually boost that so it's happening more often? There's work in both places that can only be done in those places. But if I'm the common factor between the two places, can I be better by harmonizing that a little bit?
Interesting. I'm gonna need some time to think about that one. Dare I ask if you have any homework to drop for this week, this coming week? I don't need any more homework. I don't need any more on my plate, Chris, but yeah. I do enjoy you dropping it and me never doing it. Like with Casey Neistat and Dan Mace, where every Tuesday, well, it's supposed to be every Tuesday, Casey Neistat does like a Tech Tuesday thing. And the ongoing joke has been right from the beginning of it that Dan Mace would create the introduction for that week's vlog. And it's awesome because every time Casey's like, I wonder if Dan was able to get to it this week. And then it flips to Dan. He's like, sorry, bro, I was really busy. Maybe I'll get to it next week. And it's been going on for months. And so I feel like you and I have that same combo. You drop the homework and I never do it. I just enjoy listening to you drop it. And then maybe the next week I say something about it, but I never do it.
In the spirit of personal PD, here's the thing. So here's where I'm going to play. I'm going to try and come out of the dark as far as being the chicken robber. I'm this next week, I'm going to try and I'm making connections with other teachers at other schools to have a conversation about developing my ASD programming and find a way to, I feel almost ridiculous saying it, but making intentional and accountable relationships to develop my programming and believe in the positive that if someone is willing to sit down with me and talk with me about it, that they're on one hand proud of the work that they've done, and secondly, that they are interested in helping me develop myself. So I'm going to force myself a little bit outside of the comfort zone to believe that the person that's willing to talk to me. Can I share one thought just before I say that last thing? Because I'll lose it. I realized this week that the people that were willing to give me their time to explain things, how valuable that is. I had this kind of profound moment of kind of wrestling with the fact that someone actually talked to me for a great deal of time. And I realized I was doing, I was kind of wrestling with the, I don't think I have time for this. And when that voice started echoing through my head, I started to get uncomfortable with the fact that I couldn't shut it off, that I ended up focusing more on the fact that I thought that I had to go, I had to be somewhere, it was like this anxiousness to get to the next thing. I ended up staying in the conversation, filling out the conversation, thinking about it on the drive home, picking my kids up, and realizing kind of when I got home that I should have stayed more in the moment with that conversation because that person was giving me their time. And I flipped it right away to the moments where someone has asked me a question about something and I've spent time talking with them, talking it out, and coming away feeling like that was kind of cool, and realizing that I had just given up. It's the wrong language, that I'd spent time with this individual, right? Because that's deficit language when you say you're giving up time to do something quality, like the perception somehow that you're stealing from yourself to give to another is one way to look at it. But what if it's just about building the relationship? And this is the necessary criteria for building a relationship long-term. So that's what was kind of clicking off in my head, is that I've spent time with individuals. They've shown gratitude, as you were talking about today. I'm going to be working on that this week, that people, when I reach out and I ask them to it, that it's not sort of quid pro quo. They do want to help me. It's easy to ice somebody when you email them, right? You just don't bother answering. Never saw the email. But I've had several people reach back out and they've basically said, come on over, come and see the programming. We're happy to help. And I'm going to step through those doors this week, especially. And I'm actually going to look for those doors all week long to try and sort of make more connections. Not all of them could sort of flourish or bloom, but maybe that's the homework. And maybe that'll work in both of our contexts. It sounds as if I don't have any duties this week, which is a great way. Like if I had calf duty, that's an amazing way to build connections because you have a scheduled time where you're going to connect with people. But that's what I'm going to do. Get out of the class, meet other people, start remembering people's names. I got to start working on that too, but sort of stay open. I want to create some stress in my life by being more open and not the stress that comes with holding the door shut.
Sounds good. I can't wait to hear about how that plays out next week.
I'll be sleeping well. All right, man.
Okay. Thanks, Chris. It was another good one.
Ciao, man.
Talk to you later.
For sure.